pay it forward, because you never know how you could help someone in the future or how they may come back and help you. And I very much felt that in the last 4 months. I've had so much help from people I've helped in the past.
My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech Podcast. I'm in London, England. It is so exciting to be here. And I am with a fellow podcaster and entrepreneur. Go ahead, Kathy, and tell us about yourself. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about Geek Girls Meetup.
You know what? It's really weird. That's the first time I've been introduced as an entrepreneur.
That congratulations.
It was weird.
And I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So I am a fellow podcaster. I have a couple of different titles. So if I quickly just explain who I am. So I am...
Can we start with your name though?
Yes. Kathy White. It's really boring. I'm sorry. So Kathy White, I am the founder and director of CEW Communications, which is where I am now an entrepreneur. And I'm the director of Geek Girl Meetup UK, of which I do a podcast, which is called Geek Girl Meets. And kind of similar to you, it's sitting down one-on-one with a woman and then just like being like, tell me all of the things that you know. It's like my own personal selfish excuse to like take someone else's brain and find out more and kind of be inspired. And I thought other people would enjoy doing that, as like listening to that as well. So that's what I do. Geek Girl Meetup UK is actually part of a wider organization, which is Geek Girl Meetup, which started roughly 7 or 8 years ago now back in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, typical kind of reason for starting, but something that's still very, very important today. Women that started this organization were meeting each other at tech conferences because there were no other women there to network with. You know, it was a total sausage fest. They were just surrounded by blokes. They were like, this is not good enough. So they decided to form Geek Girl. And the initial idea was to put women in technology on stage. To first of all show that women in tech exist, second of all to create new role models, and thirdly because confidence breeds confidence, and the minute you can see someone who is like you doing that, it's much more likely that you will go off and do it yourself. Started in Stockholm, it's now in London, we've recently opened in Barcelona, there's interest for Dublin, we're in Mexico, we've done some stuff in Singapore, we're in Berlin.
Crazy.
Bit all over. But we're all quite independent. So we're all under the Geek Girl umbrella, but then we do our own thing. So here in the UK, we do events every month and they have a slightly different theme. So we either focus on a particular sector within technology or we focus on a particular role. Mm-hmm. So it could be that we're looking at designers or we really want to focus on female founders. And we'll find three different women, slightly different backgrounds, to come along and share their insight, tell their story, pass along information that they've learned, or just, you know, show some data, which is really cool and everyone can geek out over it, in order to inspire our audience. And we're open to men as well, so we want to have a mixed audience in the room. So we do these monthly events. We have an annual conference, which is usually 200 to 300 people. And it allows me to go absolutely crazy with trying to talk about as many different types of technology as possible in one day with as many different women as possible in one day, which is great fun. And then we have the podcast as well.
And how often does the podcast come out?
Well, when I hadn't started my own business more regularly, now it's slightly bad. I've been a bit slack, but I've got about six awesome interviews that are currently sitting on my laptop that just need to be edited and published. When I'm in a good strait, it's usually every week.
Once a week.
Once a week.
And how long have you been doing the podcast?
So I started just over a year ago.
So cool. I think people don't understand how much goes into producing a podcast. So I don't think you're slacking. I think that you have like a lot of life going on. And when you talk about editing an episode, it's hours and hours of time of... If you record, you guys think about it, if you record a 30-minute conversation and you listen to it just once, that's 30 minutes, and you got to do that. And then you have to listen to it about four or five more times in order to edit it. So it's a lot.
Yeah. It's and a the lot. Uploading, yeah. the writing that goes yeah. inside it, then the marketing.
Show notes, the marketing. Yeah, it's yeah. a lot. It's a lot. And so what were you doing before you started your own company?
So when I was at uni, all I wanted to do was be a television and radio presenter, which is why the podcast, for a personal reason, is something I love doing because it's my outlet for that. Right. But when I left uni, it was not long after we'd had the recession. Mm. And I just wanted to get into media, but that was going to be really, really hard. And I fell into PR and working for an agency, but it was an agency that was headquartered in San Francisco and it specialized in working in tech. Mm. And when we say in tech, we're talking about the whole ecosystem. So they were working with VCs, co-working spaces, mm-hmm. accelerators, startups, everything. So I fell into this world of not knowing anything about PR and not really knowing anything about tech. And I got completely and utterly obsessed. So I just kind of fell in love with working with founders and, you know, innovators and learning more about how they were changing industries, what the future could hold. And in doing that, I kind of just fell in love with connecting people and making introductions and seeing how bridges could so easily be created between different cities, different people, different nationalities, different everything. But it was all to do with technology and it was addictive. So that was my niche. And the one thing that happened was I soon discovered that I actually don't really like working for other people.
Yeah.
I had some bad bosses. I had some good bosses. And in the process, I learned the kind of boss that I wanted to be. And from working with founders and, you know, entrepreneurs, it just made me want to start my own business. It's all I've wanted to do for the last 3.5 years. So in December last year, I took the leap. And I'm now 3 months into running my own communications consultancy. So I do everything from PR to speaking, events, content curation, social media, strategy, content, blah, 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 all the whole thing. Specializing in working with scaling companies and then the companies that support them.
And your specialty, like what you're really passionate about, is the tech industry and startups. And obviously you've met so many incredible people doing your Geek Girl events. What about the tech world really like pushes you, like drives you? What excites you about it?
The thing is, the tech world is shaping the whole world, right? You know, we talk about tech as a separate sector, but it's not. Tech is an enabler for everything else that's happening in the world. It's the way that it's going. It's the new revolution. And when you're surrounded with people that are at the forefront of that and are really thinking about what could we be doing in 10, 15, 20 years' time that 50 years ago would just have seemed completely and utterly impossible, it's addictive.
Right.
It's kind of like a weird drug. Just kind of gets sucked in. You're
totally.
Like, tell me more.
Totally.
And it's just a bit crazy. It's like, you know, the whole idea that, you know, founders and entrepreneurs of tech companies are the new rock stars. You look at how much money these people have and the impact that they could possibly have on the world. And it's, you kind of, this is an area that you just kind of want to remain a part of, really.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love it. And what, like, you've interviewed so many people and you've put together all these events. Is there any kind of like aha moment you had in a lesson that you've learned from someone? Like one, this is kind of vague, but I interviewed a CEO of a massive company a few weeks ago in Barcelona in Spain. And she was really, really down to earth and nice and humble. And she was like the CEO of this massive organization. And I was just like, wow, it is possible to just be rad, you know,
yeah.
And you don't have to be an asshole.
No.
And I seek out like examples of that because unfortunately I think more times it exists that people seemingly in business have to be ruthless in order to like accelerate. And so I felt just this like, man, I can't even describe just this like, like, I wanted to just like kiss her feet. Like, thank you for existing and showing me that like, it's okay to be me and be nice. And I can still be the leader I desire to be.
Yeah.
Have you ever run into somebody or some lesson through your events or your podcast where you're like, oh God, yes. Or like some lesson that helped accelerate you forward?
So I think one of the biggest things that I've carried with me since I first started, and I'm not quite sure where the lessons come in. I think it's just through the community as a whole, is actually seeing how paying it forward helps a lot, like ridiculous amounts. So I have these like five things that I now live by that I've learned through working in the tech industry that kind of loop back very nicely to how you should be in life. They're the kind of my values, and it's all derived from the tech community really. So it's, you know, pay it forward, because you never know how you could help someone in the future or how they may come back and help you. And I very much felt that in the last 4 months. I've had so much help from people I've helped in the past. Find your tribe. So you're surrounding yourself with like-minded people, which is always great.
Right.
But always don't be afraid to also challenge the norm. So right. Think outside the box. Why should things be the way that they are? You know,
right.
It's like this whole like female fight. You know, we're not accepting that we have to not be on the board or not right. be on stage, right? We're challenging that. That's not right.
Right.
I also believe diversity is key. That was another thing that I've learned, probably just from seeing so many bloody white board men panels, everything. You're just like, oh my God, I'm so done with white male CEOs. Like, Jesus, go away. Give me some diversity of thought. The most successful companies will be those that are completely diverse. And the other one is just being completely openly authentic. Everything I do now, I'm just me, because that's the most important thing. So I don't believe in being a dick. I genuinely hate that. And I'm really open to the point where last year, inspired by other people, I decided that I was going to openly tell the world about my depression and anxiety, and not just tell them about it, but tell them how I was planning on kind of getting past it, in the hope that someone else might read that and go, oh, right, okay, maybe I should give that a go, and maybe that will help my own brain. Subsequently from that, I ended up talking on a panel at Web Summit last year, and, you know, we were talking with VCs and founders on stage about how, okay, there's a measured way of talking about this, but it's okay to not be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of those lessons have come from meeting people within this industry, and a lot of the women I've met as well, because I think with women especially, we're much more open, especially with each other. We can be very strong, but we're also aware of where we think it's a weakness, but it's not. It's where we have emotion and we're okay with revealing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing.
Before we move forward in the conversation, where can people look up your blog post?
So I'm on Medium. So just at Kathy White 10. So my Twitter handle, it's my Medium, it's my everything
and
handle.
It's 10-10 or T-E-N?
10.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so you were saying about being vulnerable, and I love this conversation because I'm really vulnerable in the way I do business as well. And I'll receive messages from people who care about me saying, I'm really concerned because you're always yourself, and people may not hire you because of that. People may not want someone so just open. How do you feel about that? And I've made the choice for myself. I'm like, well, fuck it. At least I'm always me. So if that person's not gonna hire me, they're not the right person for me. Do you ever feel concerned?
I think that exact same thing. I would have said that. If I can't be open with you in the way that I do business and how I am, I don't want to work with you.
Yeah.
I don't. Because if I'm going in and I'm being open and I'm going to not be a dick, I expect you to be the same.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, then quite frankly, it's a work relationship that's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, I'm even open with my team, which is really hard because you know, it's this is like conflict on like, oh my God, I have to be the leader and I have to be strong and I have to be perfect and I have to be an example for them. But at one point, like, can I just be human and say like, hey, this is what's working for me and not working for me. And this is how I'm going through this process of being a leader. And I need, you know, your support to be the best that I can be, just like I want to support you guys to be the best that you could be. And all of that is very vulnerable and open. And, you know, I honestly don't know if I'm making the right or wrong decision in terms of will it hold me back or not. I just know it's the right decision for me. Even if it holds me back, I'm okay with that. I'd rather be held back and myself and honest and put myself out there than live a false life and accelerate forward feeling completely like an utterly a fake alone person.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we need to do more in trusting our guts.
Like, yeah.
You know, that, yeah. that feeling where you're like, I don't yeah. feel good.
Our intuition.
I don't feel good doing this. Mm-hmm. It's against everything that I believe. Interestingly enough, I was with a couple of guys yesterday who are founders, and we were talking about the importance of gut or sleeping on it.
Yeah.
Or flipping a coin to see what the coin says, but actually knowing in that moment, oh, I'm glad it says that. Or, oh, no, I don't like that
totally.
It says that. And I think it's the same thing. You know, you don't have to change who you are to run a business. You want to be who you want to be, and you want respect from your employees mm-hmm. based on that.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work for them, you know, they'll move on. It's such as life with work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there may be others that actually really gel to that and really work well and respond to it in the way that you want, and you have the relationship with the team that you need.
100%.
So I think it's just about gut. And, you know, I don't want to be an Elon Musk or, you know, I don't want to be Travis with Uber.
Yeah.
I don't want to be taking any of those cliche names that we hear for women who are leaders, right?
Yeah.
Who are totally rocking at it. They just unfortunately have those names. I want to build a company that works and is successful, but do it in the style of Kathy White. Just
right.
like you should do it in your style.
Totally. Something that matches your lifestyle and your desires and something that feels comfortable for you. What can someone expect when working with you?
Pretty much everything I just said. Love a drink. You probably go for a meeting with me, there'll be booze. You know, when it comes to working with me from a comms perspective, I will be really open with you, to the point where, you know, if a startup, say, comes to me and says, you know, we just want to be on Forbes or Wired or TechCrunch, I'll be like, okay, yeah, so that might not happen, genuinely.
Yeah.
And this is why I in terms of comms and objectives and, you know, return on investment for that, I want it to be tied to the strategy of your business, and I want it to be tied to actually achieving your goals, not just vanity PR. Vanity
oh my
goals.
Gosh. Wait, yes. Address this. What's the difference between vanity PR and like real customers?
So I mean, real customers. Okay. So if I use the example of a tech startup, right? Vanity PR for me to a degree is the founder is profiled in a major magazine.
Right.
Or they just want to get on TechCrunch because then they've kind of like ticked a gold box.
Totally.
And there's nothing terribly wrong with vanity PR. There can still be an effect from mm-hmm. it. But it's not going to push the needle on your business. Your business, if it's a B2B business, that's going to do nothing. You want to be going where your customer is reading. And that's where the real comms side comes into play. If you don't engage with that or spend the time researching or thinking about the strategy behind that, you're going to struggle.
Right.
And what typically happens is if you work with a PR, or even if you do it independently, you can end up getting those vanity pieces that look good and then you see no return at all.
Right.
And you don't know why. But yeah. the simple reason is that you've just told a bunch of people your story or your right. news that are just not relevant.
Right.
So it's never going to return them.
And pretty much vanity PR can play an important role when you're fundraising.
Yes.
Other than that, it doesn't really get you customers.
No, I mean, you know, it gets.
I mean, maybe a
point.
Trickle, but maybe, yeah.
I mean, if it's, say, within the tech press, then it might be like some early adopters
right.
might be there.
Right.
It could help with investors.
Right.
But actually what's going to matter a lot more with investors is seeing how many customers are
totally.
Using you.
Like, I think using sites like Betalist or like there's a site list, I think it's submit.co, and it has all the sites where you could list sites like Product Hunt and this yeah. and that. And if you just submit your company to all those different sites, you'd get a lot more customers and early adopters than you would being in one of the major media sites.
Yeah. The other thing to think about is that we now live in a world where the news cycle is not 24 hours. It's
yeah.
like an hour.
Yeah.
And then something else happens.
Because totally.
The way
it's like a second.
Yeah, exactly. Like the way yeah. we digest our news has completely changed. The way
right.
we look at media has completely changed. The amount of channels that we're looking at is significantly more than it was 20 years
right.
ago. And if you just focus on vanity PR, you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
Because when you talk about PR, PR is only ever going to be as effective as the rest of your marketing strategy.
And I'm going to be really, really open about something because I think it's important. I think when dealing with press, I mean, I've been a journalist since junior high school and I've been in the PR world and I'm sure you could speak to this. It's all about relationships. Yeah. And like recently I had, the Women in Tech podcast was featured as one of the top podcasts by Entrepreneur Magazine to listen to. You guys, I got that because people knew I existed. Like it was relationships. They didn't like find it in the ether of the world. Like it's all relationships. So the best way to start getting PR is from the very beginning to just start forming relationships so people know that you exist. And then when they're writing the article, they're going to think of you first. But it's not about like having the savvy press release and, you know, cold contacting a journalist, because I get this so much. Like, I know this would interest you. Like, oh, do you? Because right now what interests me is dinner with my girlfriend. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's the other thing that I struggle with. I've had this recently more in starting my own business. I have conversations with startups that want press. And then when I tell them how much I charge out at, they're like, Oh, okay, we're a startup, we can't afford that. You're not buying my time, you're buying my contacts.
Yeah.
You're buying my relationships.
It's very true.
Yeah.
That's super true.
The thing is, I can do strategy and I can tell you the story that you need to go to, but I have relationships that you do not have.
Right.
And I'm not just going to hand them out for cheap.
Yeah, meals. Totally. I don't know if you want to say this on the show or not, but what is the starting rate that somebody should be like, I can contact her at this point?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I want to work with people that are really aggressively looking at their marketing. So not just doing the vanity stuff, because I mean, to be honest, it's boring for me.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It genuinely is, because it's kind of the same thing every time.
Right.
You tick the box of knowing who the investors are, how much funding you've had, what the kind of USP is and everything. And it's the same thing. It's not the same thing, but it is the same thing in my head. And it's the same people I'm talking to. The exciting part for me is when I'm working with a business that's actually had some serious funding. So it's gone past product market fit,
right,
and it's going after a serious customer acquisition play. And that's where you get to be more creative in the comms that you do and how you apply it. So for that, you know, you're looking at having raised either a serious seed round of a few million or you're at your Series A level.
Right.
And then rate wise, you know, I'm in a weird position in that I'm not a freelancer, but I am independent.
Yeah.
I don't have a team yet because I'm 3 months old.
Right.
I'm a baby. And I am going up against agencies that have bigger teams. So my charge out rate is higher than a freelancer, but undercuts an agency.
Right.
At the moment.
And because you have all the relationships. Yeah. I mean, my attorney actually worked for some of the biggest law firms and now he's independent. But I know that he's seasoned having worked with law firms, but it's a better rate for me because he doesn't have to pay the huge overhead.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those charges are because of the fancy office space.
Yeah. I don't have an office space, really. I live in Starbucks or nicer coffee shops around Shoreditch.
How can people get involved with Geek Girl?
So, there are many ways to get involved. You can get involved by downloading and giving my podcast 5 stars on iTunes because it needs it.
What's the URL again?
So
for the podcast?
For the podcast, it's on SoundCloud.
Okay, on SoundCloud.
So you can find it on our actual website. So there's a page for the podcast on geekgirlmeetup.co.uk. It's on SoundCloud and it's available to download on iTunes. So if you're not in the UK, you can get involved by listening to podcast. If you are in the UK, all of our events at the moment are run in London, but we would like to get it out of the city. So if you want to set up a Geek Girl meetup in another city around the UK or anywhere in the world, just drop us a note.
Awesome.
And we can start that happening. Come along to the events and come along to the conference. All of that information is on our website when it becomes available. And in a newsletter that we send out. So you can sign up for the newsletter as well.
And on Twitter, it's at Geek Girl.
So it's, there's a few of us. We are specifically at GGMUK.
Okay, GGMUK. And then how can people tweet you directly?
I'm at Kathy White 10.
And the number 10.
Number 10.
Perfect. Kathy, thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast.
Hey,
this has been awesome. Podcaster to podcaster. Yay. So exciting for me. I was like chatting her up about mic gear and stuff before. It was very, very, very cool. You guys, you know, you have the Women in Tech Facebook group. So just go to womenintechvip.com, which takes you directly to the Facebook group. That's womenintechvip.com. And you could always tweet at me, at Esprit Devora, or at Women in Tech Show. I will see you guys, talk to you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.